Listening Library presents The Last Kids on Earth and the Forbidden Fortress by Max Brallier. Read for you by Robbie Damon. Chapter 1. Okay, I spy with my little eye. Is it the fortress? We agreed, can't do the fortress again. Is it a rock?
Nope.
Is it a boulder?
Yeah.
A boulder's just a big rock. I shrug. I can't help the scenery.
I can't help that our games of I Spy are getting repetitive.
We've been sitting in the same spot, looking at the same thing for a long time. And not a long time like ours.
Nope.
June and I have been perched on this billboard, staring out at that fortress for weeks.
We're doing a surveillance stakeout thing. We're basically spies. Spies who do their spying from really far away.
And spying from far away is good because the whole vibe of the fortress messes with my head. Like staring at an optical illusion that you can't quite figure out.
We've been at it so long that we've pretty much turned this billboard into our home away from home. Away from home.
It's darn near cozy now. We've got ball game butt pillows, a solar-powered hot chocolate machine, and enough reading material to last us until the next end of the world. On the plus side, it's given June and me some quality one-on-one time. We've got about 200 inside jokes. We're pretty much super chums who never ever argue.
For the last time, Jar Jar is not force sensitive. He's...
Hey, you're just messing with me again, aren't you?
Neener, neener.
It's been a very long and very weird few weeks. How weird? Oh, let me count the ways. And the locations. Right here, June and me perched on the billboard's walkway. June's hunkered down in a knit cap and an army jacket. It's a cool look, and I'm bummed she thought of it first. All I've got is a plain baseball cap and my camera. And down below, an elevated train track. That track leads to the thing in the distance. The fortress that looks like the sort of joint Skeletor would rent out for a Sweet 16 bash. It's spooky strange. Has it been built here? Constructed by some mad monster architect? We don't know. We just know it's not normal. Also not normal, the cosmic hand. The sucker-covered, other-dimensional monster tentacle glove that is forever wrapped around my wrist and fingers. The cosmic hand used to do one thing and one thing only. Allow me to wield the Louisville slicer and use the slicer's other-dimensional energy to control zombies. But then, I did something huge. I controlled a zombie without the slicer, with only the cosmic hand. Since then, the cosmic hand has been, like, evolving? That's not good. And in the past few weeks, it's changed a ton, which is scary. Scary enough that I've kept it secret. I feel like that character in every vampire movie who gets bit, but doesn't want anyone to know. So they have to go around hiding the bite marks, and it keeps making them more and more paranoid and nutso feeling. For real. I even got this extra baggy, super long sleeve jacket to keep the growing, changing part of the cosmic hand hidden. But if you look beneath it, you'll see. Bigger, scalier, more up my armier. Also really itchy. The cosmic hand is starting to feel like part of me. Or worse, like I'm part of it. And there's nothing I can do about it. I mean, if my monster buddy Skelko were here, I'm sure she'd have some suggestions for how to get rid of it. But I don't much like imagining them. But Skelka's not here. Neither is Rover. And worst of all, neither are Quint and Dirk and Drooler. They're missing. I'm worried about them. And I'm worried I'm starting to become an actual monster. All this worrying is too much to keep bottled up inside. Something's gotta give. I know what I need to do. I need to tell June about the cosmic hand. How it's been physically changing, like, a lot. Because maybe that'll help free up some space in my conscience. I've been trying to work up the courage to tell her for the past few weeks, but haven't been able to get the words out of my throat. Every time I start, I lose my nerve, and it's like, hey, June, I need to tell you something.
Sure, what is it? Did I ever tell you I have a pillow shaped like a taco? But today's the day. I'm gonna tell her. Spit it out, no excuses. I'm just gonna say it, out loud, with my mouth. Right now. June, listen, I start, working up my loopy guts to make the confession. I gotta tell you a thing. And it's a thing that could be really, really... Just then, my teeth start clanging together. The billboard rattles. We hear the spine-scraping sound of rusty metal grinding against even rustier metal. The train is coming.
Put a pin in that thought, Duder. Train's almost here, June says.
It's time. She's trying to sound calm, even though what we're about to do is nothing anyone could ever be calm about. Suddenly, the train appears, racing beneath us, wheels screeching and shrieking. June stands.
There he is, she points. Tiny Splotcher.
Tiny Splotcher is the single monster sentry perched atop the train. We call these sentries splotchers because of the splotchy ooze stains they leave behind them when they walk. And we call this one Tiny Splotcher because, well, he's tinier than the others. June hoists herself over the billboard's ledge. I gulp, following, as June shouts,
"Jump!"
And we do.
Hold up, pause, time out. You're probably confused about what's going on.
Maybe even more confused than I am about my stupid weirdo hand. So, let me catch you up real quick. See, I was campaigning for mayor of Mollusk City, the community of mostly friendly monsters who live inside the Millennium Super Mall, which is fused atop a massive centipede monster we call the Mollusk. Then a few things happened real fast. First, we learned that the Mollusk was traveling straight toward our arch-enemy Thrall after being secretly hijacked by one of his evil servants. And it was kind of my fault. I had pledged to protect the monsters aboard the Mollusk, but the whole time I was unwittingly delivering them to their doom to become Thrall's eternal servants. And it was all due to my careless, ill-thought, impulsive decision to use the cosmic hand. So, I abandoned my campaign for mayor and decided to stop being polite and start getting real. To tell the truth. That fight I told you about, it's here now. Sooner than it needed to be. And that's because of me. I used this power that I don't understand, and it revealed our location to Thrall's forces. That's why the Howlers attacked before. And that's why Thrall himself is coming now. But that's when Thrall showed up with an army. He was seconds from destroying all of us when Gost entered the fight, tackling Thrall. Yay! But then Thrall stabbed Gost with a bone spike. Sorta yay, sorta not. As Thrall clutched the wounded Gost, he said something. Something that changes a lot for us.
I have big plans, Gost. To complete them, I need what is in your head. And I will get it. I know a creature who will pry the information from your brain.
And whatever Thrall needs from Gost's brain is something we want, too. It doesn't even matter what the info is, because the first rule of defeating an evil warlord, never let that evil warlord get what it wants. Thrall vamoosed with Gost off to deliver him to this mysterious creature who apparently specializes in prying information from brains? Weird job. How does one even get into that? Is it like an apprenticeship deal? It was far from anything like victory. The Mollusk was hurt. Bad. But it could have been a whole lot worse. Wait, nope. It was a whole lot worse. Because after Thrall escaped, we discovered that Quint, Dirk, and Drooler were gone. Just totally and completely disappeared. The only reason I'm not paralyzed by sadness and fear right now is because Yersel, the Mall's resident conjurer and Quint's sort of teacher, swears that Quint and Dirk are alive somewhere. She says they were only teleported. And I have to...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?